What's going on, everybody? Another edition of Damon G Sports. Find me on anchor.fm, one-stop shop for podcast needs. With me again for, I think at this point, the show should just be Damon and Dio, or Dio and Damon at this point. I'm just Dio, Dio, my man, the Grouch. What's up, my brother?
Not much, man. I'm oddly, finally, like, I'm accepting that this is what we're doing now. Like, this is
our new normal.
This is our new normal for the time being. So it's now like, because I have not gone to a job in, I did a remote deposition recording this week, but like, I haven't physically been at work since the 30th of March.
Oh,
so
wow.
The 31st of March, right? So like, I am completely, yeah, like, you know, it's weird because like getting back to work, whenever we do get back to work, whatever the new normal is, it's going to be a lot to try to deal with because like we've gotten so used to this that we're in now, this whatever this is, you know.
So, I mean, I'm with you. And it's like, if you're able to at least work from home on a deposition in between your Instacart runs, which is great. You know, again, you're one of the safest people I know in regards to social distancing. So your new normal has taken shape for the last month or so.
Right.
I'm very grateful that, you know, you and I are two of the smart people who don't jeopardize that and don't immediately want to go have a cookout,
right?
Or have like a 10-person dog walk. You know, when the statutes were released today, especially in Texas and Dallas, I on my walk before the show, about 10 people in dog park. You know, they're all cool or all hanging out because they're all in the one fucking circle jerk with all their dogs. And yet there's a big expansive park and nobody's experiencing distancing.
Right.
Everybody's all up on top of each other.
Yep.
And, you know, to their credit, the police are kind of saying, nope, y'all might want to break that up. And, you know, my apologies to my white brothers and sisters out there, but
y'all,
it's about time that the cops broke up your little cookout, your little get-togethers, and now you understand when, you know, when the Karens call to speak to our manager or to break up the cookout, and you're not doing anything,
right?
Ta-da!
Yeah. Like now, and it's been this thing, right? So we've seen the protests, the armed protests, and that inside of the government buildings, which is like, what? You and I, if you and I walk into a government building with a, like, any type of firearm, hell, a pocket knife filled with bullets,
we're dead.
We're dead, right?
We're dead.
So the simple fact that they can do that is, it's not wild to me because I kind of figured that this would happen. We've seen this happen prior, but now it's like so blatant about this shit. And it's like, okay, so you guys have, you're not being, this isn't tyranny. This isn't taking away your rights. This isn't slavery. This isn't any of those things that the rhetoric that some of y'all keep on saying. No, we are trying to stop a pandemic.
Yes.
And like, because one of the things that people had been saying for like the longest time is like, oh, it's not as bad as the flu. More people are going to die from the flu. We are only, so it's May 1st.
Yep.
This has already killed more people than the flu does annually in the United States. America now has the most deaths and cases than any other country on the planet. Right? And flu season's basically, you know, like that's the flu for a year, kills anywhere between 12 to about 65,000 people. They're already at, so it was 58,000 last week. It's up in the 60s now. We're beyond the, oh yeah, it's not going to be as bad as the flu, right? We don't know how the fucking virus works either.
Right.
We don't know how it passes along, really. There's an idea, but like medication that works on other coronaviruses, because the thing is, coronavirus is a umbrella. So like bronchitis, a bunch of other things that we've had for a long time are coronaviruses as well. This is just the novel COVID, or the novel coronavirus, COVID-19, right? So like, we're not doing this because, you know, tyranny. No, We're trying to stop the shit from spreading. We don't want this to become endemic to the to the human population, because we don't have one, we don't have a vaccine for it. Two, we don't have any medication that is specifically targeted for that yet, because we don't know. It's still very new. It just was a thing that, like, it came onto the radar last year, late last year, right? Usually it takes to get medications for stuff, usually takes years.
Years, yeah. For
that stuff to get through, right? A virus or a vaccination takes at least, usually between 14 and 18 months to be made, right? Mm-hmm. And right now, we're just kind of like reaching out in the dark, because every single, I've got nurses in my, like, extended family and such, and like when we're in the WhatsApp group chat, they're like, we don't know, we legitimately don't know what makes people better and what makes people worse, because there's medications that are like, oh yeah, we'll try this one, it makes it worse. Other ones, oh yeah, it looks like it's working, cool. Then the next day the person dies. Like
clinical tests, the study, right, yes,
right, like this is basically what it is. Like, they're kind of doing this stuff like ad hoc in each different like place, and like, we're trying to keep it from becoming something, like I said, that's endemic to our population. The flu, which people love to call it the Spanish flu. It's the American flu. Started here. Swine flu. People love to say that this is a Chinese thing. No.
Yeah.
Here, again. Basically, all of the major things that have had, that are like major viruses and stuff, here. Either they first became a thing here, or they spread here in a way that couldn't be fixed, right? With the flu, with influenza A and B here. If it wasn't for America, the rest of the world wouldn't be an issue for the rest of the world. But now, because of this, we know no vaccinations, no medication,
nothing.
If this becomes endemic to us, if we don't get that, and that's one of the fears, is we might not be able to get a vaccination for it. That's one of the fears right now amongst the medical community. So,
if you leave it up to Bill Gates, we'll have it tomorrow.
He doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about.
I know. That's why.
Like, yeah. And that's the thing too. People need to stop listening to people that are like, I'll say, intellectual celebrities. Right. So the Bill Gates of the world, the Elon Musks, the like any of the celebrity doctors as well. Do not listen to them. They don't know what they're talking about. Dr. Phil, he is a psychiatrist.
Yes.
Don't
not a very good one either.
And not a good one. Right. He has not been practicing in over a decade now. Over a decade, right. Mm-hmm. Dr. Oz. He's been a disgraced doctor for a long time. I don't believe he has residence. He has privileges at any hospital in the United States anymore. He has been sued so many times over falsehoods that he said and things of that nature. So when he comes out and says, oh yeah, it's not going to be as good as, or it's not as bad as the flu, he's already had to apologize for that, right? Then he said, oh yeah, there's a, you know, if 2-3% of the population of children that go back to school die, it's not, that'd be acceptable. He had to go apologize for that. Dr. Drew as well was heavy on the, oh, it's like, people don't, there's no reason to lock everything down.
Where the hell was Dr. Drew after all these years, by the way?
Right?
Like, where the hell has he been hiding? In the rehab center?
Just doing BS. And like, then he had to go on about 2 weeks ago, like, yeah, I was wrong. I apologize. And the thing is, they're doing this stuff because they don't want to get sued. But once all of this is over and the new normal sets in, people are going to start getting sued over the things that they did. Because when you are out here spreading misinformation, that's, you can become a liability, especially if you have influence.
Right. And I think that's kind of where we're at right now when it comes to celebrities and influencers. And, you know, we're used to social media people talking out their ass a lot. Wrestling, sport, combat sports, sports in general, fandom of all types. But now the celebrities are even looking even more dumb because of it. And not for nothing, you know, you brought up Dr. Phil. My nickname for a long time was the Puerto Rican Dr. Phil. I think I'm better at his job than he is.
Yeah. Just looking at how he handles people on the TV show. Of course, the TV show is for ratings, but like, no worthwhile psychologist or psychiatrist is going to handle situations like that. Right. Like, come on now.
But unfortunately, people like this putting their foot in their mouth is commonplace. And with today's first preliminary topic, we wanted to discuss people once again in the wrestling and combat sports community putting their foot in their mouth, maybe not even literal. Hey, maybe some of you are literally doing that. I'm not there. Wouldn't shock me. But online, a lot of y'all speak with your chest a lot.
Yeah.
And you put your foot in your mouth. And then sometimes you put both feet in your mouth. And then you double down. And you and I have talked about this about other people online, where they double down on the defiance, and it thusly makes them look even more ridiculous because of the doubling down. Right. So when you say, like when we talked about a pre-show, when you say that wrestling Twitter is at it again, or combat sports Twitter is at it again, what specifically are they doing this time?
So it's a combination of things, right? So you've got one of the things is the romanticizing of like past, you know, talents, whether they be in ring or managerial, valet, what have you, right? And like, I'll see this, it'll happen like every like week or two. They'll be like, oh my God, this person was amazing. I'm like, who? And you see who it is. It's like some random person that appeared on Nitro like 3 times. Right? And a lot of times it tends to be like the valets. You tend to see this amongst Stan Twitter.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Wrestling Twitter. So like they'll pop up and they'll be like, oh my God, she was the prototype. Of what?
She was the blueprint.
Mm-hmm. She's the blueprint, right? And I was like, of what? She wasn't in ring. Right? It was like, oh my God, she was a great wrestler. She wasn't in the ring. I don't know where you guys got this idea from that this person was in the ring, but these are not facts that you're putting out here, right? And a lot of times this has to do with aesthetic more so than the actual talent of said person.
Oh, right. No. And when you showed it to me, and I know exactly who you're talking about, I'm going to look it up really quick.
Come on, Wanalea.
Yeah, that's who I thought it was.
Yeah. And she danced the top
ECW arena. No.
I saw this the other day. I'm like, I'm genuinely curious, like, what you guys... What is it that's like making you guys like flock towards her right now? Because she had a very short run.
Well, that wasn't even her.
Right.
It was Nitro Girl Shay.
Well, no. That wasn't Shay.
Really? Because I just reverse searched the photo and it came up as Shay.
So Shay was a little bit different looking.
Okay.
But this is the thing too. So like Asian women within like pro wrestling, there's so few. Then, like, even the Google search,
you know, Google search makes me think of Shay when it's Kimono Wanalea,
right? Yeah, no, like, because
the blueprint, fuck out of here, man. So, for those that don't know, Kimono Wanalea, if you've watched old ECW, and we've talked about this on this show, where part of the marketing fix for the tapes, the VHS tapes, barely legal, where she danced suggestively up on the ECW arena, in a towel or a sheet, and that was kind of the drawing point of the tape. And then when you go back and watch it, it was trash.
It was like it wasn't anything. Like it wasn't even Skinamax. It wasn't even it was bad. So like seeing folks like so it was Kimono Wanalea or what was she called in WCW? She was the manager. She was Lea Meow.
Wow.
Right.
At least they didn't call her Asia.
Right? But she was like the manager for the Jung Dragons.
Oh my God, I forgot about Jimmy Yang. Oh Lord. Okay.
It was just like the whole like seeing this, right? So she was with the company from 99 to 2001.
But wow, that long?
Right, but the thing is, she was used sparsely. I watched fucking Nitro every goddamn night. She wasn't there like that often. Like, she really wasn't. So, like, when I see folks say this, and they'll say this about, like, other random people, too. They'll be like, oh, this dude was amazing. And I'm like, what? Who? What? Why are y'all hyping this person up? Like, they didn't... they're like, oh, my God, their impact is, like, amongst Stan Twitter, like, everything gets, like...
magnified.
Magnified. They're like, oh my God, this person's impact. They didn't have any impact.
Are you sure they don't mean Impact Wrestling?
And they weren't in Impact Wrestling either. So it's like, it's like when you see stuff like that, and I'm just like, I grew up with this, right? So like, I remember, what was his name? Christian, K-R-I-S-T. Yeah, I forgot how it's spelled on Twitter. But like, I remember it was a while back, like him and a few, he's one half of the Tiger Driver.
Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. And like I saw like they were, because he must have been like rewatching all of the Raws and Nitros and things like that. And they're like, "Oh, this stuff was crazy. I don't see why you guys didn't understand it back." And I was like, "Yeah, see, this is the thing. Context. Context is key. You cannot understand why people were liked and disliked if you weren't there for it, right? If you didn't, if you were not in the social climate of the time." Why people pop and why they don't, you're not going to understand it, because there are a lot of intangibles that you're just not going to be able to get from watching a match on a streaming service or reading about them on a Wikipedia profile.
Right.
Like it's just not possible. So like when I see this, I'm just like, what the fuck? And it's, because there's like a line, and I know I've said this before many times, and I'll continue to say it, but like the shift between millennials and Gen Z, and specifically within Gen Z, I'm going to say Gen Z A and Gen Z B. Gen Perfect. Z A, because millennials are up until 1995, mm-hmm. and then after that, it's Gen Z. But people that were born before the year 2000 have far different mindsets from people that were born after it, because the rise of the internet had not fully happened yet.
Right.
So they still kind of had a little bit of that analog age right before, you know, crossing over into the new millennium. Mm-hmm. And with what we have, like people that were born in 2002, 2005, and they're going and watching these things now, and they're like, oh, this was awesome. It's like, ah, see? At the time, it wasn't that awesome, because there were so many other things that were better than this, right? Like, the people that I see them stand tends to be over the aesthetic as opposed to the actual work.
Ooh, yeah, that's dangerous.
Mm-hmm. That the people did. And it's like, I understand liking somebody's aesthetic. If I wanted to go for somebody's aesthetic, Glacier would be the greatest goddamn greatest wrestler of all time,
right?
But he wasn't. Like, that was one of the worst things that had happened. He was a decent wrestler, I'll give him that, but yeah, the hype that they gave him, because this was like right after Mortal Kombat
the movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So like
the first one, for y'all who are at home, Mortal Kombat movie,
which is,
we've said this,
yeah,
the best video game translation to movie, period.
Period, because it actually does what it follows the video game storyline. No extra stuff, no trying to like crazy flesh stuff out and add new things to
no artist imagining.
Happen. Nope.
It's aside just, from Scorpion and Sub-Zero, everything else is on par.
On par. And even then, I didn't like Scorpion's bird thing, but like all of the fight scenes.
Oh, excellent.
The intro when they are introduced in the movie is still one of the hardest scenes I have ever seen in my life. And I will die on that hill. But as I was saying, like, yeah, it's just one of those things where it's like this aesthetics versus actual talent. Actual
work. Yeah.
You know, like, and they don't realize that back then what was aesthetically pleasing is not the same as what's aesthetically pleasing now. Because there's been a shift in things, especially when it comes to things like women, right? So body types back then, it was only one body type that was seen as being acceptable.
Yes.
And now you have a myriad of them. And pro wrestling fans tend to still like hold on for
dear life to that old way.
Old way. And it's like, nah, because that old way basically shut out a whole bunch of different ethnicities of people, because these are not body types that were super common in said that, you know, there are more larger body types or just different shapes that you didn't see amongst, you know, the blonde.
The blonde
white girls that you saw in WWE. Because there was a period where it was nothing but blonde white women in WWE. Like, China was the only... China, Jacqueline...
Ivory.
Ivory, yeah. So China, Jacqueline, Ivory. What was the other black woman? She's still wrestling now.
Oh, Jazz.
Jazz, right? So you had that, but then you had Sable, Miss Kitty, Molly Holly.
Was Molly Holly blonde? Yeah, she was blonde.
She was blonde.
Her natural hair is not blonde. Okay.
Right. So she was blonde at first when she came through. You know, Michelle McCool, all those girls where it's like all you had was blonde white women. And the thing is, nothing wrong with blonde white women, but when you only have blonde white women, that's an issue, right?
Not even everyone likes blonde white women.
Right. And like, that's just not realistic. I like, when it comes to diversity, I want actual diversity, right? So like, of course, you had like the Victorias that would show up as well, and things, but like you had, it was the ones that got the push were that aesthetic. Those are the people that were on the pedestal, had that aesthetic. And I was just like, okay. But then like when I look back and I'm like, oh yeah, you want really cool stuff? Here's this person. Here's this person. Oh, it wasn't all that cool. I'm like, they're doing stuff that's like, you know, they were doing things like, for instance, like Blitzkrieg. A lot of people don't remember Blitzkrieg from WCW.
Briefly, I know who you're talking about briefly.
Yeah. If I remember correctly, Jack Evans took over the
gimmick,
the mantle for a while. Mm-hmm. So Luchador doing the wildest shit that I had ever seen in WCW. And that's saying something because we had...
all the Luchadors.
We had all the Luchadors at the time. So when you've got Rey Mysterio Jr., Juventud Guerrero, Psicosis, all of them.
Eddie
doing the crazy stuff, and then I'm like, Blitzkrieg was insane to me as a kid, and like, you show that to them, they're like, yeah. What the fuck?
So you know, like how we're talking about, like, how like people now have an appreciation for. Here's one person I've seen now that has a lot more appreciation, and she doesn't fit the mold of the blonde, you know, the blonde white woman that WWE pushed back in the day. But Bull Nakano.
Oh yeah, Bull Nakano was a.
So I implore every single person who watches professional wrestling, go back and watch Bull Nakano matches and tell me that she's not a badass.
Yeah, like there's a whole, there are so many women in Japanese wrestling. So, all right, I'm going to go ahead and go out on them.
Go ahead. Soapbox, right? Jump on it. Go.
So just so you know, all of the innovative bomb ass moves that you've seen, almost every fucking one of them was created by a Japanese woman. And that's, I'm not like, that's not, oh yeah, I'm just trying to like
stir the pot. No, like,
think no, legitimately, that is where this stuff came from. Like, I did a Twitter thread a few years back, and let me find it real quick.
Well, for me, as you're saying this, because I agree with you wholeheartedly, I'm trying to picture any of, like, let's say the because we talked about her 2 weeks ago, not Bertha Faye, Fabulous Moolah. You really think Fabulous Moolah was gonna pull those moves out? Nah, bro.
Nah, like Moolah was
enough. Couldn't sell dog food if her face was on the can, right?
Exactly, right. But so real quick, I'm just gonna run down a few moves that people like really pop like for, right? Mm-hmm. So the move that we know as the Jackhammer was created by Jaguar Yokota, who created a shit ton, innovated a shit ton of the moves that we love right now. So wasn't Goldberg.
Nope.
No. She was using this in the 80s. Okay. So like a solid almost decade before Goldberg came onto the scene with the thing, right? Let's see what else. Another person, Akira Hokota, otherwise known as like the Dangerous Queen. So the gut wrench sit out power bomb.
That's her.
She created that. The Northern Lights bomb, otherwise known as the snowplow, she created that. The Death Valley Driver,
one of my favorites,
Etsuko Mita, she created that. The Victory Driver, or as we know it by as the Burning Hammer, which Kenta Kobayashi made famous, created by Kyoko Inoue. Okay, cool. We can keep going. The like torture rack into a power bomb.
To a power bomb,
right? Lioness Asuka. So that's also where Asuka got her name from.
Her name from
it's an homage to Lioness Asuka. Let's see what else. The like the electric chair, like suplex. Minami Toyota.
Who, I was waiting for you to drop her name. Yeah.
If you want to see an insane athlete, Minami Toyota was easily one of the greatest talents I have ever seen in professional wrestling. It
man or woman.
Man or woman. The shit that she did made no sense physically. She was a very small woman when she first came onto the scene. But she was otherworldly strong in the ways that she was able to do stuff and had crazy hops. Because she used to do a suicide dive where she would, you know, bounce off the ropes, run, and just straight up jump to the top rope. Like, just from the mat to the third rope, just hops.
Just hop.
And then go over. Most men can't do that shit now.
Right? I think I hurt myself just looking at it. Yeah. Right.
The air raid crash, as we know it, or as Sheamus uses it, the
Irish curse.
The Irish curse. Oh, no, no, not the Irish curse. What is it?
Yeah,
the Irish white noise.
White noise, sorry.
The white noise, right? That's Mariko Yoshida. The Vertebreaker.
Sugar Shane Helms did not make that.
That would be Megumi Kudo.
That would be great pronunciations on the names here. I really appreciate
it. I have my last name is Nigerian. I like people to pronounce my shit properly, so I make sure that I pronounce things properly. Yeah. But yes, the Kudomi Valentine or the Kudo Driver. So these are like some of the most like well-known moves that we see all the time, right? And this is one of the things where I'm always like, representation matters, right?
Of course.
Because you need to see this stuff. People need to see themselves, right?
What's history?
Right. But when you only see one group of people being shown as the, you know, the status quo of something, even though most of the stuff was created elsewhere by a completely different group of people, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's screwed up. That's messed up.
And I think the American wrestling fan, or even like the American sports fans in general, will think because they saw it in America,
right,
that automatically, by default, an American was the one that innovated and created it. And that's not always the case. I know we talk about Chris Kanyon all the time as being one of the innovators. You know, we were talking, referencing the luchadors. Look, Jerry Lynn, if you're an old ECW head, was one of those luchadors as Mr. JL because they were trying to take advantage of the Power Rangers thing going on at the time, and JL was Jerry Lynn.
Yep.
If you go back and watch, and I implore people to go back and watch Jerry Lynn matches that don't include RVD.
Fuck it. No. You can just go back and watch Jerry Lynn versus RVD because that is the blueprint for what wrestling matches are now.
The reason why I say that is because people will come and say, oh, he had his best matches with RVD because RVD carried him or whatever the case may be. I will say, look at Jerry Lynn matches without Rob Van Dam. Yeah. And you can see he don't need Rob Van Dam to put on a 5-star match.
Yeah, yeah. No, like go back and look at any of his matches. But if you want to see the influence that a person has, watch Jerry Lynn versus RVD. Those matches were the blueprint for what we have now. Since people like to say, oh, this person was a blueprint. No, those two were the blueprint for who we have now. Like, you have a lot of people, like, pro wrestling is one of the few, like, entertainment avenues where you can go back and find the exact moment or the exact person that created something or changed you know, the industry as it is. And Jerry Lynn and RVD, like, you watch those matches, go watch Adam Cole versus Ricochet. Mm-hmm. Where do you think they got this stuff from? Where do you think that those people were inspired from?
Right.
Those matches. Because it wasn't WCW and it wasn't WWF. Right? So, like, yeah, like, those, Jerry Lynn, one of the people that you need to go back and watch. Tajiri. Mm. He was cool in WWF. Go back and watch Tajiri in not just ECW, but go and watch him in, like, AAA and those things. Tajiri is, like, he's one of the all-time greats.
Oh, no, he doesn't get his just due. No,
he does not get his just dues, and it's crazy. But, like, yeah, he, one of the all-time greats, because he could wrestle with anyone, mm-hmm. right? Because being able to pull off a cool move is one thing. But being able to make not only yourself but somebody else look good is an art that so many people have, right? So, like, you know how people love Super Dragon?
Yep.
No. Super Dragon wasn't all that great.
Nope.
Like, he is the...
He was a dick.
He was a dick, yeah. And he is the epitome of, like, a glass cannon in that he could do a bunch of cool shit, but he couldn't do anything outside of just doing cool shit that really actually ended up hurting a lot of people. So, like, and that's another thing, aesthetic, right? Cool costume and stuff. Couldn't put together, like, a solid storytelling match to save his damn life. And in the 2000s, you had, that's when it started to become a split from being story-based to being, holy shit.
Yeah, the work rate group.
Mm-hmm. The work rate group, right? And, like, you can have both. You know, we've seen that, like, Lucha Underground still, to me, is the best, like, is the best encapsulation of being able to do everything. You have the spots, you have a story, and you've got the holy shit moments, right? Right. So, yeah. But, like, yeah, it's a weird thing about, like, people love to see, just because they saw their person do it first, oh, they're the person that did it. It's like, nah, that's not how that, no.
No, but that's fandom, you know? Like, they automatically, it goes, you know, to borrow a sports line here, where people go, oh, Jordan, LeBron. I'm like, look, man, every era is going to have their quote-unquote GOAT.
But MJ's the GOAT. And if you're not watching The Last Dance right now, go back and watch it so that you can see how unreal of an athlete Michael Jordan was.
Thankfully, you and I grew up in that time where we could see Jordan live. And and as a suffering Knicks fan, I got to see him torture my team almost every freaking year.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and just for me, just to say, like, hey, I despise Jordan for him doing the Knicks dirty like that.
Right.
But I love the actual athlete and the fact that, look, he was a dick. So we talk about dicks, right? Like, dickheads in wrestling.
Dick talk.
Dick talk. We talk about dicks in wrestling and jackasses. Jordan is a known jackass. He is petty as fuck.
Yep.
He punched his teammates in the mouth.
Yeah, a degenerate gambler on top of that as well.
And womanizer, but we won't get into that.
Oh, yeah. Now, he likes himself some white girls.
Well, if we talk about the strip clubs in Atlanta back in the NBA days in the, you know, the 1980s, 1990s.
Oh, yeah. There are many stories still to this day.
Gold Club. We could talk about the Gold Club for hours, but...
Yep.
Yeah, see, when people talk about GOATs and this, that, and the third, back to wrestling, it's like people now think Jericho is the GOAT because... Longevity does not equate to goathood.
To goathood, right?
You know, I could be wrestling for 30 years. Rey Mysterio's been wrestling for 30 years. Does anyone call him the GOAT?
No, I'm not going to call him the GOAT either. Like, it's right. Like, and the thing is, like, that's the thing. So, like, when you have, for younger people, like, I always implore them to go back and do their due diligence. Make sure that you know what you're talking about.
That's asking too much work for young people, dude.
I understand that, but I'm just saying, it's like, you can't say greatest of all time if you've only seen the highlight reel of one person, right? And that's the other thing too, is they'll only go and see a highlight reel as opposed to going to see the actual body of work.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I'm one of the people, I do believe that Jericho is one of the GOATs. Like, he should, in the top 10 discussion, I'm gonna have Jericho as one of my people, right? For a bunch of different reasons. He's worked with goddamn everybody. He's worked right. every goddamn where. He has made himself a star in three different decades. How many people can you say that has made themselves a star in damn near three decades? We are right. now entering into his third decade of being a professional. Oh, no. We are in it. We're in his, what, fourth decade now, actually.
If you go back to Japan.
Yes, because the 90s, the 2000s, and the 10s. So in three different decades, he made himself not only relevant, but a star that had an impact. Brett could wrestle with anybody, could wrestle damn near any style. Mm-hmm. Like, sure. When people say, oh, yeah, he's one of the GOATs, I'm like, okay, yeah, I get that. But when people are like, oh, he's the GOAT? There's more to this than just that. And just because you didn't grow up seeing someone doesn't mean that they can't be the GOAT. And that's been one of the things with Michael Jordan is you had a lot of folks that that didn't get to see it, even in like replays. So now a lot of folks, this documentary, The Last Dance, is the first time they've actually seen Michael Jordan.
Right. This is their first viewpoint.
First time seeing him and be like, oh, wow. He actually really was that damn good. Because like I've seen so many people over like the past week or two that have been like, oh shit, we were wrong. We were wrong. LeBron's not the GOAT. It's like, you know, it's a whole bunch of different. It's different. There's levels.
Like I'll be the first to admit, my hatred for Jordan as a player, as a Knicks fan, always clouds my judgment, you know, in terms of the GOAT versus him versus LeBron. I always say they're two different positions, two different roles, two different mindsets. Right. We always say the closest one to Jordan's Kobe in right. terms of mental mindset, okay, preparation, ruthlessness, it's Kobe.
Right.
That there's no, for me, there's no question about that.
Right.
If you're talking about ruthless, cold-blooded killer and on the hardwood, we're going to go with Kobe or Jordan.
Right.
LeBron's Magic Johnson.
Yeah.
He just happens to play power forward. Where Magic played center for like one game. But that's neither here nor there. I can get an NBA talk any day of the week. I miss sports, by the way. I only miss sports for the story, not for the
there
game.
You go. Right.
I miss the story. Because I saw on ESPN, if you go to ESPN.com, there is a chronicle of Alex Smith, the quarterback of the Washington Racial Slurs. And he blew his knee out gruesomely. His leg just went to shite. If you think the Joe Theismann injury was bad, for those of us who are old enough to know the Joe Theismann injury on Sunday Night Football, or Lawrence Taylor on Monday Night Football, this one was just as bad. And there are graphic fucking pictures of Alex Smith's leg. Truly, there are graphic photos of Alex Smith's leg. So go back and check that out on ESPN.com. That's what I miss about the sports story. I don't give two shits about who wins the game, who loses the game. Artistry. Love that stuff. But in realm of wrestling or realm of just keeping on what we do here on Damon and Dio, find the show on YouTube and on anchor.fm, one-stop shop for podcast needs, who is sponsoring this episode. We watch Dark Side of the Ring. Mm-hmm. Every week we chronicle this.
Yeah.
Because the story is a lot more interesting than what may have happened in the ring in the 80s and 90s.
Right.
So this week was something that's kind of something for me that's important because, as you know, I was a journalism major in high school. I was part of the journalism club. I interviewed athletes that came to the school, all that jazz. So that's kind of what got me started in broadcast journalism.
Right.
So John Stossel, you know, is that, you know, almost like if you remember Shame on You or Art McFarland, you know, Consumer Reports, was the dude for 2020 looking at scams. Like right now we have the internet full of those people looking for scams. John Stossel was a real life scam finder. So this week they chronicled the fact that, let's be honest here, Dr. Dave Schultz, the professional wrestler, who within 2 seconds of hearing him talk, you know this boy has seen some shit.
Oh yeah, and done some shit.
And done some shit, because he was a bounty hunter. We wound up finding out later in the episode. But the story is Dr. Dave was told by Vince in character, supposedly, to interview with John Stossel of ABC's 2020. Uh-huh. So John Stossel, being an investigative reporter to break the story on shams and flimflams, decided to kind of break the shell on professional wrestling. Uh-huh. So he literally goes up, and I implore people who still view wrestling as fake, even though Dio and I talk about it as a fake sport, it is sports entertainment. Do not, I repeat, do not go up to a professional wrestler and say that what they do for a living doesn't hurt.
Right.
It is staged completely. There is no pain. And, you know, the F word back in the 80s and the 70s to protect the business,
right,
was the word fake. Right. So John Stossel, as a journalist would do to kind of get some meat on the story, said, you know what I think? I think this is fake. I think what you do isn't real wrestling. Because John Stossel was apparently a high school wrestler, which I did not know. That was part of the story. He was a high school wrestler. So Dr. Dave, in character, which you don't know this at the time, in 1984, 85, you don't know this. He loved taps, I'm going to say, because, you know, our favorite person, Cornette, says it wasn't even a full-fledged, you know. But he loved smacks. In wrestling terms, Stossel, not once when he knocks him down, but twice because Stossel got back up and like, okay, well, I'm going to keep the interview going because I'm a professional. And did this motherfucker just hit me? Kind of thing.
Right.
And it was comical. Yes. My business partner's in the chat saying the episode was almost comical.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was comical.
It's one of those things. So like how I said earlier, context, right?
Yes.
So if you didn't grow up with wrestling from the 80s, and I mean like you were in the time period, right? I was born in 85. Damien was born in 1965.
Hey! I look good for somebody born in 1965. Let me tell you.
Oh, yeah, granddad. But like, yeah, so like the whole thing of, because we've known that pro wrestling was scripted. You know, this is it's been a commonly known thing since the mid 90s, early 90s to mid 90s, right? So back then in the 80s, people thought it was real.
Right.
Like for real thought it was real. Even to this day. So I remember the thing with Jericho when he stepped on the Brazilian flag and the police were like, the military was like, nah, you fucked up. Because they still thought it was real. Right. So. And that was in the 2000s, right? So this is, right, this is in the 80s. This is before the internet. We had nothing even remotely close to the internet. We barely had, back then, cell phones hadn't even become a thing yet. And when I say cell phones, I'm talking about the cell phones that look like this, that you put up to your ear.
The Zach Morris phone, yeah.
The Zach Morris phones, right? And some of y'all might not know Zach Morris.
Oh, my God.
And if you don't, good God, we're old. But, like, yeah, so if you don't have the context of it, like, the stuff's going to be like, oh, he's a dick. I was like, yeah, see, this is the thing. Context is key. If you didn't understand what it was back then, you won't understand why Dave Schultz reacted the way that he did, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Stossel was a dickhead about the shit. I will admit that. Did he deserve to get – should he have been slapped? No.
Oh, but, I said yes, but
it's like, so this thing, like from a professional standpoint, should he have been slapped?
No, not at all.
But just from a man to man, yeah, he was asking for this. But like the thing, the wild thing to me though was, and that's the thing, Dave Schultz brought this up. Later on, like a few months later, Hogan went on to
he choked out Richard Belzer.
Like, and so he had him in what's called the guillotine choke, yes. Right? So this right here is underneath the chin. Mm-hmm. And when you crank up underneath, the two veins that are in your neck, your carotid arteries, get blocked off.
Yes.
It takes 4 seconds. You put somebody out. And he put Belzer out quick. Because he was, knowing what I know now about combat sports, the human body and things of that nature, I could see exactly when he went out. And he was out for a good little minute. And the thing is, Hogan knew that he was out.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, he just drops him. And it was a violent drop. Because when you pass out, your body loses all, you know,
anything.
Everything. Like, you just become a rag doll at that point. And as I said in the chat, like with Stossel's ear felt better after he got his money. I was like, right, hey.
He talked about he had one ear ringing and then he had the second ear ringing and then it got in the way of the way he parented.
He parented, yeah.
Come on, bro. You got that $200,000 check. You felt a whole bunch better.
Exactly. And like, I know, so I videotape depositions for lawsuits. So I get to see stuff like this all the time where people have like, so the thing with his ear, right? What he did is called malingering. And ooh, that's basically, yeah. So basically what that means is when the pain's gone, but the person is still saying that the pain's there. And it's more of a psychosomatic thing after that, or they're just doing it to get money or sometimes to get medication and things of that nature.
Okay.
So that was, had that happened now, nah, it'd have been different.
What's the name of the term again?
Malingering? How do you
malingering. Hmm. I've never heard that phrase. That's why I found it fascinating.
Yeah. So it's to exaggerate or feign illness in order to escape duty or work. It tends to be where it goes for. You see that in a lot of workers' comp cases. When you're injured on the job and things of that nature and such. So yeah, that's what he was doing there. Like, but he was doing that in order to get more money for the situation. And should he have gotten a settlement? Absolutely. Like, yeah. If there was, you know, they fucked up. But
do you think Schultz should have gotten fired for that?
So that's the thing about back then. We don't know what actually happened, right?
Mm-hmm.
We don't know if Vince told him to go out there and smack him. We don't know. It's not like the WWE now where they're filming things constantly to protect themselves, right? This is one of the reasons why they film everything. It is to protect themselves from litigation so that there's always a record of what's going on, right? So, it's weird.
I was just curious because as I watch this episode, I'm thinking based on everything this season we've heard about Vince and my man covered up a murder. I mean, for goodness sake, to leave homeboy out to dry almost to get canned. And then the Mr. T thing, I think is the thing that got him canned was apparently he assaulted Mr. T or talked ish to Mr. T before WrestleMania 1 because T was booked. Sprinkle the allegedness. So he either had an altercation with Mr. T. And for those that don't know who Mr. T is, and you're not old enough to know who Mr. T is, he was the television star that segued to movies back in the 80s. And he is known as B.A. Baracus from the A-Team. And also, my most favorite role of his, Clubber Lang from Rocky 3. Where
Pain.
Prediction.
He's the Terry Crews of the 80s.
Ooh, that's a really good comparison.
Right. He was the large, muscular black man of the time that had an affable personality.
Mr. T also had a cartoon, by the way, and cereal.
Yeah, he had
a breakfast cereal, which I bought as a child.
And so many gold chains. So many gold chains.
Me the Fool. Well, and for those who don't know, again, he appeared in WrestleMania 1 as a tag team partner of Hulk Hogan. So the Belzer thing happens while Mr. T and Hogan are doing the rounds, like, what's it called? The car wash? We call it the car wash when you go and you visit different, you know, different locations to publicize something. So they did the car wash, and that's where the Belzer thing happened. But to Dio's point earlier about time out, he choked out Belzer, Hogan, right? But they're not going to punish Hogan because he's the main event of WrestleMania 1. So
that's the thing right there.
That's the thing right there. The punishment should equal the crime.
Right.
But if you're the moneymaker,
doesn't matter.
As we know in society, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Because Belzer definitely got a check for that.
Oh, and they don't even tell you how much he got. I'm sure we can find it, but they don't mention it on air how much Belzer got. And for those who don't know who Richard Belzer is, he was on Law and Order. Was it SVU?
Both.
Was on both? Okay.
Because he started out
as Munch.
As Munch, right. So it started out because it was just Law and Order, and then he moved to SVU way after the fact.
Okay.
But yeah, the thing that a lot of folks don't tend to understand is, like, so if you're not built to take trauma, it's going to affect you differently, right?
Right.
Some people are just legitimately built to be able to withstand concussive forces in a way that others can't, right? Belzer's not one of them.
No.
At all. He was...
He weighs less than me.
He was a 150 with 225 weights in his pockets, right? So, like, Hulk Hogan at the time was... This is before... back surgeries and injuries and such, right? This is back when he was still Hulk, like a big dude. Mm-hmm. So when you literally have the 28-inch whatever pythons wrapped around someone's neck, like, that's gonna put somebody out quick.
Yeah.
And you put him out, and you can see Belzer's body go limp, and Hogan's holding up that 100 and whatever pounds, and then he just drops him, and you just see, you could hear, it was like, and it was like, I was like, fuck, this is worse than I remember from when I saw this when I was younger. And like, Mr. T's like, oh, it'll be all right. He'll be okay when he wakes
walk
up.
Walk it off. He'll be all right, Belzer.
He'll be all right when he wakes up. It's like, ooh. Like, they had to take him to the hospital. Right. Because one, that's a definite concussion. Two, he was choked unconscious. So like, this is bad, right?
This is a lawsuit.
Yeah. This is absolutely a lawsuit that you would lose, right? Or that you would win if you were the person that got choked out. So, like, it was seeing that is just like going back and seeing it now. Like, folks that are younger aren't going to understand because they don't understand the context of the time, right? So now you couldn't do that now. Like, the fear of, like, not just lawsuit, but just like straight up getting shot by somebody for doing something like that is high, much, much higher. So yeah, it was some stuff.
and that is the kind of like how the episode plays out, the Stossel thing, and then whether or not Hulk Hogan and Dave Schultz, apparently Hogan pulled up Schultz from the minors, if you want to call it, to work for WWF as their number one heel before, and this is all pre-Mania. You know, for people who don't know who Dave Schultz is, this is all before WrestleMania 1. It's sort of like how I talk about the NFL before the merger. There was plenty of Super Bowls before the AFL-NFL merger. So this is pre-Mania. So there was WWF wrestling before that, guys and gals. Don't think that WrestleMania started at all. There was wrestling before that. So in a weird life change after everything goes down, he becomes a bounty hunter.
Right.
So... I remember New Jack was a bounty hunter at one point.
Yeah.
So I laugh and say, are wrestlers from the 80s and 90s just built differently mentally? Like you said, you have to be able to survive trauma to be a professional wrestler.
Mm-hmm. It's
is being like a bodyguard or a bounty hunter, is that something that is easier to do because of your life in wrestling or combat sports?
I don't think so. No.
Okay.
It's more of a mindset thing than anything else. So I've worked with three people that were bounty hunters prior to working at the jobs that we were in. And none of these people were like super large, tough people. Like, they were just very smart and capable.
Right.
So like, as they say, size doesn't matter. That's for real. Like, one of the ladies I worked with was maybe 125 pounds.
The way you started that sentence, bro.
Hey, it's what it is. But it's like, one of the ladies that I worked with, she was like 125 pounds. And she had like pictures with the people that she brought in as a bounty hunter. And it's like, yeah, no, if you have somebody like dead to rights, basically, like, you show up to the house with a gun, like, yo, under arrest, get up out of here. You're going to get folks. So, but I do think wrestlers from the 80s were crazy. So like, because yeah, like the amount of drug abuse, Like, it was a different time, partying hard, and the mindset of people back then of what a badass was. Mm-hmm. Like, you can see, so like, you can use like media, so TV shows, movies, comic books, things of that nature, and right. what was considered to be a tough guy in the 2000s, so in the 10s, the 2000s, the 90s, 80s, 70s, right? You could see what the archetype was for the tough guy, right? Mm-hmm. In the 80s, the tough guy in the movie was always in a bar fight. He was a biker guy, right?
That dude from Bloodsport that comes to mind. That guy's exactly. by Chong Li.
Right. Then moving into the 90s, it was the martial arts guy. That was the tough guy. Right. You go into the 2000s and then it changed, and then the 10s it changed again. So like, all of it tends to be very much a product of the time, and he was very much an 80s person, right? Like,
oh, he looked the part.
He looked the part. Like, he had the ramen noodle
hair,
Dolph Ziggler hair back in the day. Like, it was one of the things, like, he was talking, like, oh, yeah, I was going to be one of the greatest of all time. I was like, No, you weren't. That's maybe in the fucking theater of your own mind, maybe, but you weren't going to be.
entertaining in the theater of your own mind, let me tell you.
Right. But, yeah, like, it was one of those things where it was just, like, I think it was more so just a product of that time period.
Mm-hmm.
Then it was being like pro wrestling being like a thing that's going to help you, because pro wrestling is not being able to take flatbacks and you know, like, stuff like that's not really going to help you. A body slam, a suplex, snapmare takeover, those things aren't really going to help you in a real fight. So,
you know, you try to do a snapmare on someone,
if like, you go ahead and do that, I'm just going to grab a round. I'm going to lift you up and I'm going to drop you on your head. Right. But like, it's, you have like these weird, the like,
it's weird.
Yeah, this is weird. Like this like thing that they've made up in their head. It's kind of like with Antonio Inoki thinking that like he was on some, oh yeah, pro wrestling is a martial art. Boy, stop. Mind you, he did beat Muhammad Ali in a fight.
By just going on a crab walk and kicking a boxer's legs out. It worked.
Hey, it worked, because Muhammad Ali's leg swelled up like three times its size when they got back to the back of the thing. Right. That fight actually ended. That was like the major nail in the coffin of Muhammad Ali's career as a boxer, right. Because that's when he lost his legs. And that was the key. His, like, Muhammad Ali's legs were key to his fighting style. Like, right. It was, you know, flow like a butterfly, sting like a bee. It's all about movement. And once he started getting knocked out, it's like, okay, he could still, you know, he still had his legs. But once you go and do something like that, like, they almost had to amputate. Like, so this is according to the people that were around the situation. They almost had to amputate Muhammad Ali's leg because the blood clots were that bad.
I did not know that.
That's the thing. People in combat sports, when you get hit in places, like, so boxer, yes. So you're going to have abdominals, your liver, kidneys, and then your head. Those are the places that get hit the most. Your body will start to build up padding of like muscle and calluses in those areas to take those things. Muhammad Ali had never been kicked before in his life. So then to get kicked, I forgot how many times he kicked him, but it was well over 100 some odd times. And your legs aren't conditioned for that yet. It's going to be bad.
Right.
So, yeah, a little bit of a combat sports background for you.
Appreciate that. A little thing we're actually forgetting here on the Damon G Show, brought to you by Anchor.fm. During the course of that episode, there was one gentleman who was, I guess you could say he was the snitch in all this.
Exposing
the business, the snitch. Like, people have said he's the snitch. So Eddie Mansfield met with John Stossel and ABC Sports beforehand or 2020 to kind of show how wrestling gets done, essentially. Right. And I personally did not know about Dark Secrets of the Ring until that one special, Dark Secrets of the Ring. I knew wrestling was staged, but I didn't know how the moves were executed.
Right.
So Eddie Mansfield, who, if you go back and look at the picture, if you look at WCW Triple H,
yeah,
he is a spitting image of terrorizing. When Triple H was a bodybuilder and starting with WCW. Like, that is the thing that stood out to me most when I saw it. I'm like, oh, shoot, that's Triple H's, like, grandfather. Like, what the hell is that? But Eddie Mansfield, and again, Jim Cornette, who we've talked about on this show, who has a love-hate, I want to F you bromance with Vince Russo, in our opinion, chimes in again and talks about how much he wants to beat the crap out or even kill Eddie Mansfield.
Now, folded him in half.
Cornette talks a lot for someone who can't, who might not be able to fight. Like, I'm not going to say he can't fight. Don't seem like he's not the confrontational type.
Right.
But he talks a lot for a dude that is thinking, you know what, F you, you F the business, wait till I see you. Wait till I see you. Right. What you going to do when you see me?
Right.
Nothing.
Right.
You ain't going to do anything. So the reason why I'm bringing Eddie Mansfield up, it's not even so much that he walked 2020 or John Stossel through how wrestling works. It was the stupid, dumb ass quote about Abraham Lincoln freed the slaves, but he did not free
professional wrestlers. He said that
with conviction.
And I'm pretty sure my neighbors heard me groan. Like, that was are you serious? One, here's the thing. There are two groups in America that you do not say that something is worse than. Slavery amongst the African diaspora.
Yes.
And the eradication of Native Americans. There is nothing that has happened in this fucking country that is worse than those two things. Because the Native population is literally less than 1%, basically, of the population of the country now. Like, relax. Stop. So, like, when he said that, I was just like, bruh, you built up so much goodwill. You built up so much goodwill.
I was rooting for him in this episode.
And threw it out the window.
With a dumbass quote.
Just, I was just like, bro. And he said it like, well, he said it with his shit. Like, there's an old clip of Jamie Foxx during a roast, and the dude kept on saying bad jokes. He's like, "Yeah, that'll get him on my side." And he thought this, and I'm just like, "Bro, shut the fuck up! Why did you? Why? Right.
Why did you even bother saying?"
And the thing is, you could tell the people from Dark Side of the Ring were like, "Oh, we're keeping this in because this is this idiot right here." Like, it was so stupid. It was just one of the dumbest
boys. Mm-hmm. Right. He was doing it for the boys. He was doing the secrets for the boys.
Right. And it's like, and where he was coming from and why he exposed the business, because he wanted people to get treated fairly. He wanted them to get compensated properly. And I'm all for that.
Same thing we're talking about in today's time, where we want wrestlers to get health insurance and not be treated as independent contractors.
So now, 30 years and change later, still, we don't got that stuff, right? Which, we don't know if the WWF gets sold pretty soon.
To Disney.
Look, if Disney takes over the WWE, it will be for the better.
It'll clean up a lot.
People will get paid properly. People will get insurance. People will get, like, you're going to get tested more. You're going to have, like, actual medical people. You're no longer going to have that boys club, the old boys club, that only lets people that are within control things, or only wants a specific type of people to be able to rise amongst things. Yeah. That'll go away. And that will be for the better.
Right.
Like, I know people are like, oh, it's going to be like the MCU. Look, okay.
What?
Go back, because that's the thing that people are saying. Oh, the MCU, the Disney ruined comic book characters. Like, first off, no. Second of all, look at, like, comic book movies prior to the MCU. Blade. And look at the stuff. Well, no, Blade was amazing.
That's what I'm saying. Blade, that's it.
Blade is the MCU. Because if it wasn't for Blade, there would be no MCU. So I consider him to be the first
MCU movie.
That's the first MCU movie because he was the one that planted the seed for this to become what it is. Even though the entire concept of an aesthetic of the Blade movie is actually straight up stolen from Vampire the Masquerade.
You've told me that.
Game, which, if you guys want to look into that, so Vampire the Masquerade is like it was a game that came out in the 80s that was in the same vein as Dungeons and Dragons. But instead of it just being your prototypical tabletop role-playing game where it's just, okay, you're a knight, you're a ranger, you're a gnome, you're an elf, a human, this is that and the other, an orc or whatever. You were a vampire.
Right.
And you had different clans that had different attributes specific to that clan for this thing. And it became a huge thing. And it influenced vampire, like the media vampire lore that we have now.
Mm-hmm.
So watch Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Vampire the Masquerade. Got it directly from that. Vampires, you know, being in creepy houses and stuff like that. With leather jackets and shit, straight from Vampire the Masquerade, which borrowed a good amount of that.
Not like Twilight.
Vampire. No, yeah, this is so. What I'm talking like, Underworld is another one. Like, yeah. I'm pretty sure there was a hefty lawsuit for that because they straight up jacked entire storylines from that stuff. But anyhow. So as I said, Blade, first MCU movie. But if you look at the stuff that was outside of the Disney umbrella, so we'll say the Incredible Hulk movie, or okay.
That was Universal.
Mm-hmm. Whatever which was the Hulk from the Ang Lee Hulk.
Oh, I don't remember, but the Ang Lee Hulk was something else.
So bad. He fought a hulked out poodle. Like that tell you everything that you need to know.
Look at that story.
The Fantastic Four, like, and that's the thing. Ang Lee, worst person that you could have for that. Ang Lee makes pretty, like, very pretty emotional movies.
Yes, very pretty, very emotional, and decent acting action scenes.
Right, but this wasn't one.
Nope.
Look at Fantastic Four. Mm. Horrifying.
All of them. Mm.
All of them. All of y'all. I'll fight y'all on this one. All of the X-Men movies up until Logan were terrible.
I agree with you.
All of them were terrible.
Or mediocre or terrible.
Yes. First one was mediocre.
Yes.
Everything after that was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
When this reboot...
Well, the reboot has to not make Wolverine the central character.
Right, because Wolverine is not the central character. And like, we're going afar from wrestling right now.
Right.
So we are two comic book geeks. Yeah, we're comic book geeks here, right? So Wolverine was never the main character of the X-Men, right? Wolverine was an attack dog.
Yes.
Essentially. He was the cannon fodder because he could heal and he could just go in and do damage. That's what he was. But due to, you know, the popularity of like anti-heroes and such during the late 80s and the 90s, he became more popular. And then, of course, they put a rocket on his back.
Of course.
But, like, he was never the best storyline amongst the, you know, the X-Men. Like, there are far more interesting characters. Even in his rogues gallery, Sabretooth is a better character than Logan is. Or James Howlett, if we want to use real names.
I even do that. You know, but when I was going down the rabbit hole of stuff, I found out there was supposed to be in the early iterations of the MCU, when we get to Captain America's first movie, apparently they tried to get a guy named James Howlett to be in the Howling Commandos.
Because
he was in the comics. He was. And if you follow Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes cartoon, he makes an appearance. Wolverine as James Howlett makes an appearance as Captain Fury's commandos,
right,
in World War II, which is in itself hilarious. But
right, yeah.
Yeah, so Wolverine was never the number one X-Men probably until the cartoon.
Yeah,
it was X-Men changing.
That's when he became like, oh, everybody wants to be Wolverine because you just got a weapon on you at all times, and it's like, that's not even the coolest goddamn power. Like, Nightcrawler had the best.
Thank power. You. That is the power I would want if I
like. I can teleport anywhere that I want. Plus, Nightcrawler was a swashbuckling pirate too. What? This shit was awesome.
But agile as fuck.
Yes.
Mom was a shapeshifter.
Right. Cool. Like everything. We say that to say that, like, yeah, there were better characters. And also, fun fact for you. The initial phases of trying to come up with the character of the Wolverine, they were actually going to have him be a Wolverine that evolved into a person.
Well, isn't that what Wolfsbane turned into?
Yeah, so they split the ideas after the fact.
Yes, mm-hmm. I remember.
Yeah. Like, go back and look at Wolverine's original costume. It had whiskers.
He was a cat man, yes.
He was a cat man. So he wasn't even like, he wasn't cool from the get-go like people tell me.
No. Do you remember, we'll end after this, but do you remember the Pride of the X-Men one-shot where the video game was made from, the X-Men arcade fighting game was made from? Mm-hmm. Wolverine was Australian.
Yes.
Voiced by Scott McNeil.
Yeah.
So Wolverine was Aussie, when in reality he's Canadian.
Canadian, yeah. The whole everything, yeah. One day we will do.
You know what? I'll watch it tonight, and the next time we do a show, we're gonna review Pride the X-Men, because, bruh.
Man, yeah.
Welcome to die. That's all I'm gonna say. Welcome to die.
Welcome to die. And yeah, that's the thing. So to take it back to the whole thing of, you know, if Disney takes over, Disney will fix things. Disney. One, they have a very stringent policy, like, or rather a system in place to make sure that stuff isn't going to just be completely fucked up, right? And they're going to go out and they are going to make sure that they get writers that know how to write, that know how to do long form writing. That's the thing that Vince McMahon does not know how to do. Vince McMahon hasn't done long form storytelling in like 20 years, basically. Right. The only time that he does it, it's not planned. It's a reaction it's reactive as opposed to being proactive.
Proactive. Right.
So when you have people in place that aren't just a bunch of old carnies that are essentially trying to keep a dead body warm, it's going to fix things.
Yes.
Right. Like, you're going to see new stories, new angles. You know, there's not going to be this, oh man, this person's getting buried, because you're no longer going to have that system in place for people to get buried.
Yep. I honestly could see Disney, if they do take over, going with, okay, this person's getting over with it. There'll still be elements of actual professional wrestling, right. But okay, this person really is popular with the crowd. They like the way this person works. We're going to push them. Oh, they look, you know, Charlotte Flair's of the world. And as much as I appreciate Charlotte Flair, going back to what we said earlier this episode, blonde, tall, fits the motif. She just happens to be really athletic.
Yeah. And the thing is, she's not that. And that's the other thing, too. So, like, people like, oh, she's the most athletic. It's not. She's not. You. And when you have Io Shirai and Bianca Belair on the same roster, you can't say that that's the most athletic.
Yeah, especially when you say most athletic professional wrestler, Io Shirai exists.
Yeah, like, and skill-wise, Io Shirai is probably the most skilled wrestler in NXT.
Yes.
Fight me on that one.
Oh, no, I won't fight you.
I'm not saying you. I'm just saying for the other ones. Because, like, there is empirical evidence that she is the best at what she does, right? And, like I said, like, Bianca Belair, an athletic freak of nature.
Yes.
Like, she is, that is a once in a generation kind of athleticism.
Yes.
Right? When you can go from one, when you can take what you had from one sport and translate it into another athletic thing. Right?
CrossFit and track.
Right. She went from track to CrossFit. And that's hard to do. Right. Like when you do track and field, your body is set up to do one thing. You have to she had to essentially like remake her body. But she was already so good that she really didn't have to do that. And like when I say remake your body, look at Brock Lesnar.
Yes.
Right? That is the best the best example in professional wrestling where you can see when somebody has to go from one sport to another, right? You can look at Brock Lesnar when he was a amateur wrestler. And when I say amateur, that's like collegiate wrestling and stuff, right? Look at his body back then.
Right.
Then look at his body when he got into the WWE or WWF at the time, I think.
They still were the F, yeah.
Still the F, yeah. See what his body looked like then. His body changed.
Yes.
Then look at what he looked like in the UFC. He had to completely redo his body. Everything. Like, what muscles you work on. You have to, can't bulk up too much because you need cardio. And then you can see when he goes back and forth between the UFC and the WWE, you can see a major shift in what his body looks like because each of them does something different. They need you need different muscle groups and such to be strengthened for each one, right? But Bianca Belair, she hopped from track immediately into CrossFit and just was great.
Was great at it.
Was she in the top five? No. But to be able to even compete at a high level in CrossFit, that is, you have to be insanely athletic to do that. And then to take that and translate that strength and athleticism over to professional wrestling, she's taking it to this like a duck to water. It is insane.
I tell people all the time, go back and watch her Mae Young Classic match with Kairi Sane. And you'll see that, and that was almost 3 years ago? And you'll see then what we knew then, what we know now.
Right.
That when you talk pure athlete,
it's crazy.
And I'm not going to say it's not even close, but it's not debatable that she's at least in the top two or three.
Yeah, in male or female. She is. Like I said, that's a once in a generation kind of athlete that you get, right? And the thing about a lot of what we see in professional wrestling is you don't have people that have that innate athletic ability. You have people that started off one way and then over time grew into becoming this athlete, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ricochet, always been an athlete from jump. Even when he was Sasha Banks back in the day, he was an athlete. And when I say Sasha Banks,
I was waiting for the reference.
I was go look at an old picture of Ricochet when he still had permed hair. Mm-hmm. He looked like Sasha Banks. So take him, for instance, right? Take a Jack Evans. These are people that are just athletic and have that ability. Mark Henry, athlete out the gate, right? And you have Big E. Apollo Crews or UHA Nation, whichever you want to go by, Kofi Kingston. All of these people were wildly athletic from jump.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have other folks that grew into it, right? Take Xavier Woods, for instance, since we just said Big E and Kofi Kingston, right? Woods he was an athlete, right?
Yes.
But he wasn't a next level kind of athlete. He worked his way, and he's said it many times. He was never the greatest at a lot of the sports that he did, but he worked really hard at the stuff. You can always get better at things, right?
Yeah.
But when you have people that just have that athleticism just naturally, that's a thing that only happens ever so often. And Bianca Belair is Bianca Belair is one of them.
One of them. And we talk about this all the time about you can put a good athlete in the ring and sometimes they don't pan out just because they're athletic. But when you combine all the facets, all the factors, and you can make a superstar.
Right.
And I honestly believe for all the love Naomi gets, you know, being athletic, for all the love she got all these years by being the best pure athlete in WWE, for all the love Charlotte Flair gets for being the best, you know, female athlete in WWE.
It's not the same.
Give Bianca time. Yep. And she will wow you. And you know what? If WWE ever decides to do intergender,
yeah,
I would put her to be one of the first.
Easily, yeah. Like, you see how easily she just, like, straight up just power cleans people? Mm-hmm. Like, she's power cleaning Candice LeRae. Like, Candice LeRae is nothing. Right. She is power cleaning these smaller women like it's nothing.
Imagine
I would not. Yeah, I would not be surprised if she could do that to Montez Ford.
Part of the relationship, maybe they like
hey,
that.
Maybe you're into that. Like, hey, if my girlfriend could do that, I'd be with it.
Well, we talk about, you know, in the group chat, we've always talked about, like, we like our women strong and yeah, you know, be able but to kind of like, you know, handle their business.
Oh yeah, no. As Spike Spiegel once said, I like a woman that can kick my ass. So like, yeah, that's hey, I'm with it. But like, the thing that a lot of times is, as we were talking about before, aesthetics.
Yes.
Some people don't like Bianca's aesthetic, right? And a good amount has to do with the professional wrestling community has been taught that this is the only aesthetic that is acceptable. This is the only aesthetic, because for a long time, that was the only aesthetic that was pushed.
Right.
Michelle McCool, Kelly, who I understand that a lot of the younger stans really like her because she was pretty. She was horrible in the ring.
Horrible in the ring.
That was, you can't, do not say, oh, she wasn't that. No, she wasn't good. She wasn't good. She was not good at all. And it's okay to say that she wasn't good. It's fine. You can just say, you know what? I like her aesthetic and leave it at that. That's cool. But don't say that this person was a great professional wrestler, because it wasn't. She fit an aesthetic that they liked at the point. That's why she got pushed.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, and that therein lies the issue with a lot of that aesthetic over talent thing,
right?
Because you have women on the roster that are wildly talented that do not get the same amount of love because they don't fit that aesthetic. Bianca Belair, and I'm going to say a lot of women of color, Bianca Belair doesn't get the dues that she doesn't get the accolades that she should, because when she's black as fuck when it comes to her personality,
uh-uh,
the character that she has, but even like having black history on her ring attire, which she makes her own ring attire, which
that I love about her too. She makes her own gear, man.
What? Amazing. And it all looks dope as hell too. Ember Moon, another person who is insanely athletic, for, you know, this business. A lot of folks didn't like her because of the aesthetic. And, you know, like, just Bayley, for instance. A lot of people didn't like Bayley's aesthetic.
Right.
And it's just like, just because she's not that cookie cutter, blonde hair, blue eyed, pretty girl that they had seen for like the longest time, you know? Io Shirai, people, I remember when the Mae Young Classic first happened, you had people that were like, you know, oh, this is who y'all like, because she like messed up on like one moonsault.
Oh yeah, she didn't hit her moonsaults right.
She didn't hit the moonsaults. It's like, well, this is like, she's really new to this ring. The ring's a different size. The turnbuckles are higher than they are in Japan. So just relax, give them time. So, you know, like, say that to say, give people a chance. Their aesthetic might not be what you like at the moment, but if you actually want to be wowed by the talent of somebody,
mm-hmm,
give them a chance. You have to look past the aesthetic, because the amount of times I had to look past aesthetics as a pro wrestling fan.
Man, listen, that's another episode when we're going to have to really go into some of y'all, just some of y'all. Like, I'm going to summarize this episode leading into the next one we do here on Damon and Dio. You can't whoop my ass. I highly doubt it. Watch what you say.
Yeah.
You can't whoop Dio's ass. Watch what you say. And on that note, you can find me at DamianG347 on Twitter, Damian G Show on Instagram. I'm just DEO on both Twitter and Instagram, and DEO.shoots for all your photography wonderment. Look him up, hit him up, does good work, and we will see you next week. Yeah.